In this episode of The Full Nerd, we talk about Snapdragon, AM5 Plus, and PCIe 7.0. Welcome to episode 256. I don't have it in my notes. Is that right? 256 yeah. Of The Full Nerd. PC World's premier PC hardware podcast.
296?
No.
I'm sorry. 296.
296.
Right. Oh, yeah. See, I don't have it in my notes.
256 is how many bits there are in a modern memory bus.
Yeah, we're not quite there yet. 296. 296 is the episode number for this one. I am your fill-in host, Adam Patrick Murray. On the line today, we have Gordon Mong. Hello, Gordon.
Hey, everybody.
And he's at the bowling alley. Hopefully the noise from the pins are not going to disrupt the show too much. But if you could just tell everyone to stop for a minute. And to my left, I have Will Smith.
They tore down the bowling alley in my neighborhood, you know.
Oh.
It's a real, real sad moment.
Was it a real sad bowling alley?
It was a good bowling alley. It was a fancy coast. Like, it was all 50s-y and cool.
Well, that sounds cool.
They're going to build condos there.
Speaking of cool, we got Willis Lye over on the Verticals and Horizontals.
Hello, everyone.
He's
happy
the cool
Tuesday.
One.
Speaking of bowling, I have a pair of bowling shoes that I haven't used in quite a while. I was into bowling for quite some time in my high school years, and then I need to bring it back, the bowling shoes.
Like some serious bowling shoes.
They make it worth it. Wow. I bought it at Payless at the time, and then got it for like a whole good 2 years, and yeah, just need to
polish
bring it back
off.
Yeah, we should do a team build one of these days. Just to do bowling.
Do you have your own bowling ball?
No, that's the only thing I didn't buy.
Wow.
Do you have your own bowling bag, ball bag?
No, just the shoes, Gordon. Just the shoes.
He just has the bag.
Carry the shoes.
Just an empty bag.
If you know me, I like to just save money, so I was saving money because I bought it for like maybe $25 or $30 at that time, and you know, like rental would be like $3 a rental, and I go every week, so that's it. You save money.
8 weeks you're ahead. Yeah.
See, Elena would back me up on this.
Yeah, if Elena were here, she'd be like, "Yep, that makes sense.
That's a good deal right there."
And
that
Gordon
is a deal.
Is just for audio listeners. Gordon is putting his head down.
Well, I'm sure there's a life hack where Elena could find some bowling school you could go to and like, well, like you get it for free or something like that.
I'm a student. I get the deal.
My question is, when you buy the bowling shoes, do they have the cool stripes on them, or are they just like normal shoes with slidey bottoms?
Normal shoes, slidey bottoms.
Oh, yeah. Boo. I like the stripes.
The two-tone. It makes you look cool.
Yeah.
Makes it look cool. Before we start, we got some interesting topics here today. Snapdragon, AM5 Plus, maybe, and PCIe 7.0. Gordon brought some charts for that. Before we start, though, I do want to stop and say, after last week's show, I got some good feedback, that I wanted to address. I am just a temporary host of The Full Nerd. Gordon will be returning at some point, but I do take this serious. So, you know, I wanted to gather the feedback when we were talking about consoles, and I want to use that going forward to be the best at this job as I can. Even though I'm temporary, I do take this serious. I want to get better at being a host for sure. So, you know, things like bringing to the table fully fleshed out thoughts for sure, but then also the main one was not talking over guests as much. I have a tendency, especially in heated debate, to talk over people. So a lot of people were like, that wasn't fun. So I hear your feedback. Thank you for that. And yeah, I will continue to strive to do better as your fill-in host until Gordon comes back. So just wanted to put that out there.
I thought, you know, even though it was heated, I thought it was pretty even-handed. Nobody really was hot about it, so
it was a good discussion. But you know, like I did listen to back to it my or I did listen back to the episode myself, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'm cutting people off more than I would want to as a listener. So I hear that, and I will work on that going forward. Going forward, though, something that Qualcomm is working on is Snapdragon.
Oh, that was a good segue.
I know, right? Yeah, they are hopefully learning from their mistakes as well. And the Snapdragon X Elite is going to come out and really show x86 what's what. Gordon, I know you're excited about Snapdragon.
You know, I actually, you know, I'm excited about it. And I will say, going back to the original Apple launch when they adopted ARM, I was clearly wrong and underestimated the performance that Apple was able to squeeze out of its actual silicon. And that was ARM-based. And I will say a lot of that was based on my experience with Qualcomm ARM and basically any ARM-based Windows devices going all the way back to. In fact, I broke it out.
Oh, no. Gordon's got a list.
Are we going to talk about the Surface RT? Because I got some thoughts.
Yeah, because Will had a Surface. Oh,
there it is.
Oh, wow. And it still has power?
Oh, it's still booting. Well, you turned it on 3 years ago.
How long ago has it been?
I plugged this. This is an actual, for people who don't know, this is an actual Surface RT from
2016?
Maybe 10 years ago. Look, it still works.
Oh, you got family photos. Yeah. Look how younger kids look. They're,
but it still works. And the crazy thing.
Windows 8, right? You got Windows 8 on there.
You could put 8.1 on it, I believe.
You never had. Oh, wait, what was it?
Took
this?
3 weeks.
No, there was. I don't think Surface RT ever got 8.1. Because I think it was.
Really?
I think they killed it. So originally, this is obviously.
Oh, look at that.
8.
Tiles, man. Whew.
So it was the tiles. So basically, you know, they had that Windows phone. And I didn't realize this, but they did most of the development for Surface RT on phones because they didn't have any ARM-based devices that they could.
Really? That explains so much. Man, that thing was a stinker.
Yeah, it was. But you know, I wasn't that bad. Originally, when Surface came out and I reviewed it at 11 years ago, I wasn't that down on it. And part of that is the world was very different back then. The iPad had come out and it was about a year and a half before. The entire world thought it was the end of the PC. And of course, the analysts were all wrong as they typically are. But the performance sucked. You had basically a very limited capability with Surface RT. You could run Office on it. You could run nothing else.
You couldn't run Outlook on it.
Yeah,
at launch.
Because
right?
at this point, there was no sort of like translation. It was like limited to specific apps.
Only Metro apps would run, and only certain Metro apps, as I recall. Like you had to specifically compile for it.
And then they also tried to they couldn't decide how to put people into the new interface and old interface. Remember, they had desktop mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was basically an app. It was like it looked like a Metro app that you launched from the tile menu to get to the normal Windows desktop, which was limited.
But the funny thing was the desktop mode was only allowed for Office. Like other things could not run in the desktop mode. It was
they didn't have an RT like a tile-based Office app.
They didn't redo the UI for the Metro stuff.
Yeah. I mean it was a failure, and I suppose it was expected. The funny thing is if you look at this Surface RT, it's actually fairly thin. It's for a device back then was very impressive, but
because it only ran limited apps, you got a discount on it, right?
No, I mean I remember
it was
back. I will say that was my previous employer, and some people were super excited about it, and they said, "Gordon, see if you can get one of these Surface RTs. You know, call down to the Microsoft store and see if they have any." I was like, I'm pretty sure they have plenty of these Surface RTs if you want to buy one. So no, you need to check. It's like I called down. It's like, you got any Surface RTs? Or like, I'm sure the clerk turned around and was like, we got stacks of these damn things. You want to come down? You want to buy 50 of them? Come down and get them, right? Because nobody was buying them. At the time, you had Surface Pro, which was the Intel-based Surface. It was about twice the thickness. It ran Ivory Bridge. The battery life was atrocious. I remember taking a flight. This is back when you didn't have power on planes. I had to crank that thing down to like minimum power just to get like, you know, 6 hours out of the thing. And I could barely do that. And it was clocked down so low. But I still would take that over the Surface RT because I could run everything I needed to run on an Intel-based Surface Pro versus the Surface RT, which was very, very limited. And this history lesson brings us to what we are seeing now, which is, again, Windows pushing ARM, Snapdragon Elite. Elite X.
Or X Elite, I'm sorry.
X Elite. Sorry, we're getting it wrong, Qualcomm. But this looks like, unlike that previous launch, this is serious. And, of course, there was another one that they tried many years later, which also was like, going nowhere. This one looks very, very serious. They've been hyping the hell out of this. And we should probably, like, you can go to PC World, look for a story that Mark Hockman wrote. The headline is Qualcomm says Snapdragon X Elite kicks Intel Core's Ultra butt, too.
We have a link in the description.
Yeah, there's a link in the description, and they're basically Mark they had a bunch of people down to look at the performance of the new Snapdragon Elite X, whatever the hell it is.
X Elite.
And it looks like it is very, very competitive. You know, Geekbench, Cinebench is very competitive with basically Intel's Meteor Lake, as well as, Rocket. Well, I guess I don't know if I really want to call it Rocket, but basically the previous HX parts actually
Raptor
can
Lake.
Be competitive. Raptor Lake can be, you're right, not Rocket. So that's
if they were comparing it to Rocket Lake, they're like, look at our Rocket Lake performance.
Yeah, so it looks like it's competitive with that. And they're also claiming that there's a story that the Verge has. Tom Warren wrote it basically saying Microsoft is confident Windows on ARM could finally beat Apple. That's also, again, you know, they don't really want to focus on beating Intel on Windows. They really want to bring some pain to Apple. And then finally, the last thing is Digital Trends. There's actually, I want to point out, it's a story by Arif Bacus, basically saying he was very impressed by it, playing games on it, and also that, that was the gaming performance. And yet there's another one that's saying that they actually have a version of DaVinci. This is very interesting to you, Adam. Mm-hmm. DaVinci that actually is running on natively on Qualcomm, mm-hmm. on ARM, mm-hmm. on Windows, and the performance is actually pretty impressive. So it looks like this will not be what Surface RT was. It will not be the failure that Surface RT was. It will not be the failure that the previous Qualcomm part was as well, that they tried that about, 2018, 2019 range that flopped.
Yeah, those had industrial and corporate, people use them for corporate laptops for limited application uses and stuff like that. But I mean, they didn't break into the consumer space, even like ARM Chromebooks have, right?
Well, I mean, the question I have though is that why is does Microsoft think that ARM is the reason why people love MacBooks? Like if they're saying, hey, we're finally going to beat Apple because now we have an ARM strategy, is that doesn't seem like the right way to approach it, right?
I think Microsoft's strategy on this space is to fill all available niches with versions of Windows that are viable. And, you know, this is why they were talking about handhelds, Windows/Xbox gaming handhelds, mm-hmm. right? This is another ARM laptops is a category that the manufacturers want to make. So therefore, they need to have a version of Windows for it that's competitive, I think.
Oh, yeah. Skeet Sayer says it better. Friend of the show, Skeet Sayer. Beat Apple in what? Making a new audience for ARM-based PCs? Are people actually going to look at this and be like, oh, wow, this is an ARM-based Windows device. I want this. Or they're looking more for battery life, right? That's where they can beat traditional Intel x86.
That's my assumption, yeah.
But I think is that really what else other than that? Because I mean, they're showing some impressive demos that it can keep up or beat Core Ultra in some ways for sure. But it seems like from what I'm seeing, the big takeaway is battery performance, right?
Yeah, I mean, Qualcomm has not released actual battery performance, and of course that's dependent on the actual laptops being made by OEMs. But they say that it is possible to get multi-day battery life out of these Qualcomm Snapdragon parts. And I think Microsoft is somewhat disappointed that Intel and AMD have not been able to meet Apple's, multi-day performance on ARM. And I will say that there are some things that don't match reality with the battery life claims for Apple. Definitely, yeah, it can be very... You can get amazing battery life if you're doing light duty things, but if you're going to hammer the GPU on a MacBook Pro, you're still limited by a 99.9 watt hour battery, and it doesn't get you the spectacular battery life that a lot of Mac people will scream about all day. I actually did try an M1 Mac for about a month as I was recovering, and I wasn't blown away by the battery life personally. I thought it was pretty good. Standby was excellent, though. You know, the one thing that I will say that Apple had is excellent standby time. You could just close the lid on it, leave it for a few days, and it just, you never had that usual, like, huh, the something is hung up in the driver and it hasn't shut off Windows, and now, you know, the laptop's heated up and the fans are running, and that's just your classic PC problem where there's some driver that's just screwed up, so now you're not getting the sleep efficiency that you would expect to get.
Or worse, you put your laptop in the bag before you get on the plane, and when you open the bag on the plane, the whole bag is warm because the laptop's yeah. been on running yeah. full speed.
Like,
in
whoops.
There. Just anecdotally, my wife uses an M1 MacBook as well, I think, an Air, and she plugs it in like once a week usually because she's like a super light computing. Like, she uses it to pay bills and to do email and stuff like that. But that's pretty much it. So she uses it for maybe an hour or two a day. And
it's like, mostly browser usage?
I assume it's mostly, like, yeah. I mean, I think she uses Gmail, so I assume it's mostly browser usage,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And is this an M-based
iPad? This is an
iPad?
M2 iPad Pro.
Because that's the other thing, too, is that, I mean, Apple wanted to be able to scale it, right? So is there any indication that Qualcomm is also like, hey, listen, you know, we're going to be able to scale down to, I mean, not that Windows-based tablets is a huge market, but we're going to scale down to tablets, and we can also scale up to maybe desktops. Like where are they going with this? Or is this just, hey, you know what, thin and light, you know, super performant battery life laptops?
Well, this is a tablet. I mean, I will say the one thing, even though Surface RT failed, I would argue that Microsoft actually beat Apple at what it tried to do with the iPad, because in 2010, when the iPad came out, everybody went gaga and they thought, oh my God, this is the end of laptops, right? Because we're not even talking about desktops here. This form factor is going to replace the future. This is the future of all computing. We know that's not true. Only people who don't do any work would use an iPad to do work, right?
Well,
You have the actual what they did with the Surface, you know, with your detachable, with your kickstand, with your full service OS that gave you the compatibility. It's basically, it gave you all the capability of a real laptop and something as light as a tablet. And I would argue the vast majority of people would never trade their clamshell or convertible laptop for an iPad, except for people who don't do any work. So,
okay.
We're all looking at Will.
First off,
now let's all ouch. Turn to Will.
So who
is actively using an iPad on the table here.
My measured response before Gordon came at me there with the knives out was that what's happened in both places is that the iPad launched as a consumption device, right? And it's migrated toward being a combo device. I would argue if you do any kind of drawing or art or anything like that, there's really nothing quite like an iPad at this point.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, because the digitizer and the
Apple
pencil and all that stuff
supposedly very good,
is yeah. better than anything that's short of a like a Wacom Cintiq or something like that, which you have to hook up to a full PC or laptop. The reason I have an iPad, I've said this multiple times, and Gordon just is like in one ear and out the other, is that I do my work on a desktop PC, right? And having to maintain a desktop PC that syncs up with a laptop the way I work is a nightmare because I use a laptop once a week when I come in here pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
iPad's perfect for me. I like to sit on my couch, read the book, play a game, draw, sketch. I have a keyboard when I want to type stuff. It's good. And the battery lasts like 4 days. I don't have to think about it.
Yeah. I guess the thing is what I would say, though, is the predictions in 2010 was tablets would take the world over and people would no longer use laptops. I would say the opposite's happened. You know, the iPad is really the only thing that has lived, that and like, you know, $60 Fire tablets from Amazon. It's either that or an iPad. And even the sales of the iPad plateaued, what, 2015, 2016? And they've been dropping precipitously every year because who cares? Who needs a stupid big tablet when your phone does everything? So
the thing that happened is the devices, the ARM processors in general, got fast enough that they went from an annual update cadence or a semi-annual to like the same update cadence as a laptop. So we saw a four or five year life. Like, my partner on the tech pod, Brad, has a 2017 iPad Pro, the first iPad Pro that they launched. He's been using it every day since then, right? Yeah. Like, or 2018, I think. I can't remember.
I feel like the life cycles, like I think the sales down are probably more that the life cycles are just extending because they're that good rather than less interest.
Here's my challenge. This is always my test. So you're in your house and you know, I don't want to say like a horrible thing. We could say like, hey, you got to, you have to get on a plane. You have to get on a helicopter.
Yeah.
And you're going
I do that all the time at home.
Yeah.
And you're going to be going to work in somewhere else, and you're going to be there for 6 months, but you only have 5 minutes to grab everything you need. And you have your choice. So in one room, you have your laptop, whether that's a 360 or convertible, full-service laptop, Mac, whatever, clamshell. In the other room, you have it your iPad or tablet, and the other one, you have your phone. Of those three, which two do you bring on that helicopter? And you will not be coming back to your house for 6 months.
Well, hold on. So it's a desktop PC and a phone? Are those the two options?
Well, let's say I'm saying tablet. So you have your standard clamshell tablet or Surface, and then you have your choice, and then another one is your phone, and then you have your iPad.
If they send a helicopter for me, they can wait an extra 5 minutes and I'll grab all three.
No, they can't, because just like Jack Ryan when he got picked up on that beach by that Coast Guard helicopter, you got to go right now. So here, what are you grabbing,
Will? Here's the thing, Gordon. If I grab the laptop, I'm going to plug it in. It's not going to be connected to the internet. It's going to be like, oh, hey, man, we got 35 updates to install, and we didn't sync your files over because the battery ran down. And like this is a no maintenance thing that I don't have to worry about. I just plug it in. It updates itself once or twice a month. I'm taking the iPad and the desktop, or the phone and the desktop, probably. I'll just yank the cables and then go buy a new monitor when I get where I'm going. I have a helicopter. I got helicopter money. I buy a new monitor and keyboard. It's no big deal.
But what I'm saying is, in what universe does the iPad or a tablet rank over?
This is a false argument. There's no reason to, like,
no. Listen, look, it's a hypothetical.
Which is your favorite kid?
is your favorite kid?
Yeah, which is your favorite kid, Gordon? Tell us. Let's get it all out here.
They're both your. Either you always say they're both your favorite kid. But,
yeah, but that's a lie. We all know that. I have one kid. I know how this works.
But you can't. To get back to it though, I just think it's just the tablet world is not that important. But you know, again, that's an old argument. Arguably, the PC won there, because there are far more, you know, clamshells. There are far more convertibles being sold than iPads.
And laptops are not dead. Also, I would probably point out, around that same time frame, Windows-based laptops were having their problem with the whole netbook thing, right?
That was the whole world.
You could look at Windows-based laptops, and then you look over here at iPads. It's like, okay, well, one of them is real crappy. One of them looks to be an interesting future.
The netbook enabled the iPad, because it really set a horrible experience for netbooks.
Look, they sold 60 million iPads in 2022. You tell me Asus or MSI or Dell or HP wouldn't like a slice of that 60 million iPad market? They're going to try to sell tablets.
But I mean, they're not going to be tablets. You know, a lot of these are going into convertibles, you know, 360 designs, classic laptops. We're going to be seeing, and this is again the reason why, I mean, to talk about Qualcomm here, this is very, very serious, because it looks like the OEMs are buying into it. It looks like there are multiple designs coming from all the OEMs. So this is a really big push by Qualcomm. It's a very big push by Microsoft. And all the performance claims are pretty impressive, right? I mean, the fact that you can actually kind of run with the best Intel and AMD and Apple has in the neighborhood anyway, it looks like it's going to be the real deal finally, after years and years of false starts.
But I mean, I would argue we've been at the real deal for a couple of years probably already, and that the Windows side is just now catching up, right?
Like real deal, like, for
the ARM performance. I would use my wife's MacBook, and if I'm doing normal computer stuff and not trying to do like a video edit or something, I'm not going to be able to tell a difference between that and a.
I mean, which they're still not bad for video editing, but
no.
I still think there's a difference between the actual processor and then what it's running, right? Because where this is going to fail is not, it doesn't seem to be the actual processing power, right? It's the whole idea of ARM and how that translation works on Windows. Because
that's true.
Like that's where it could fall down, and where it fell down many years ago, Gordon, when we did that video where you had two identical laptops, one with ARM-based, one with x86, and it was like, oh, okay, you open up, you know, Chrome, and it was fine. It's the same kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, what, you open up like Slack and the
HipChat. We were using HipChat.
Yeah. And the ARM-based one just like, crawl, you know,
just because of the x86 emulation was
bad. So it doesn't seem like the hardware is going to be the problem here, right? It's the software, and that's on Microsoft.
Well, it's kind of on both, because there has to be hardware in the ARM chips to accelerate the x86 instructions, but then Microsoft also has to run a lightweight enough OS that can do the translation layers to make it work.
Do we think they're in a different spot now? Do you think this translation layer is, because that's also one of the glories of on the Apple based devices, is they have a strong translation. Well,
but the real glory of the Apple based devices is they say, hey, if you don't start supporting this new hardware, we're not going to put your stuff in the store anymore.
True.
And it just works itself out. Right. They have a well-trained developer base.
Yeah.
And they successfully locked off a lot of their platform. Like, you can still download and install standalone applications on the Mac if you want. But my guess is, if I had access to the internal data, something like some massive double-digit percentage of users never, ever do that and get all of their stuff from the App Store at this point, which Microsoft tried to do with the Surface RT and bombed out spectacularly. Like, that's the other failure of that Windows 8 push, was that they made no significant headway with the store distribution model for their platform.
I would say that would even be overstating it, because you remember how the Windows Store back then wasn't really a store. It looked like the Walmart store after the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
There was like nothing left. There'd be like a can of beans that like was so dented that it was like, it was clearly botulism was growing out of it. Like,
Did you go to it? It was bad.
The Windows Store back then was absolutely atrocious.
Did you go to that event over on Utah at that when they were rolling out the Microsoft Store, and they were like, look, we have millions of developers. We're going to bring everybody into this ecosystem. Here's how much money we're spending on this. And then literally none of it happened. Because the hardware, they were like, we got to do this. We can get everybody on ARM. Nobody cared about ARM. None of the developers came over because they didn't want to give Microsoft a cut of their profits. And like, it just didn't work. And they were kind of befuddled as to why it didn't work for years, because they were like, look, Apple was able to do this. How did this work? And
yeah, I mean, there were a lot of missteps. They also, at the time, I remember they were like, oh, you don't want to charge 99¢ for this app. You know, we want to make this a premium experience. You should charge $10, $12, or $15. I was like, you know, and these were applications that clearly nobody was going to pay $15 for. Whereas, you know, 99-cent apps out of the iOS App Store was sort of like, oh, that's not even, you don't think about a dollar, right? It's like
this will save me 10 minutes. I'll pay a dollar for that, no question, right?
Right.
But $10 is a whole different bar of like, $10 here, $10 there, pretty soon you spent real money.
Well, do we think that has changed now with this launch, between the work they're doing on the hardware side, the work they're doing on the software side, Microsoft seeming to be, you know, all in as well? Do we think this is going to pan out different? If you had to guess right now, obviously we haven't tested devices. Gordon, you actually haven't gotten your physical hands on these stuff. Mark was the one who went to the meetings. Like, what is your feeling right now, if you had to guess?
I would say this is going to be a serious, on the surface of it, it will look like a very serious challenge to Intel and AMD, the entire x86 world that we've lived in. For consumers, though, it's always about compatibility. I would argue it's changed quite a bit, because, I mean, who the hell is running 25-year-old? Well, actually, there are people still doing that. I think for a lot of consumers, compatibility will be an issue, and that is not known yet. I have read a report, unfortunately. I don't have it in front of me, which I feel kind of bad about, because the person mentioned it. But, you know, it was a person who said, like, wow, the DaVinci performance is, like, really smooth and fast. But I tried to install I tried to install Photoshop, and I couldn't install Photoshop. So there's definitely a lot of ducks that still need to be put in a row. And as we know, on the Windows side of the world, Microsoft can't dictate to developers the way Apple can dictate, as the government that they have over there.
I'm sure they wish they could.
It's managed democracy, you, wish it, you know?
Yeah, it is.
We have basically, we have democracy in an open world here, and you can't force people to do things.
It's a Helldivers reference, Gordon. Sorry.
It's going to take, oh, is it? I don't know. It's going to take a lot of time to get software lined up. I do think, and then also this person, I really should look it up just to give them credit, but they did a Lightroom, they did some stuff on Lightroom, and it was just like, it was getting killed. Like, there are definitely some things that are as bad as the Snapdragon 8cx launch. They were saying, like, yeah, the performance in Slack, the 64-bit one was when it was, you know, we don't even know if it's translated. It's an emulation. I don't know what the hell it is. It's translation for Rosetta on the Apple side. I don't know. They haven't really said what they're doing on the PC side, but there were definitely some massive slowdowns, same as what we saw with 8cx in 2018. So, you know, if it turns out that you basically can get 5% of applications that run really well and then 95% that run like crap, then that's going to be the same issue we're going to have. And that'll probably doom it just like it did in 2018 again. So
the big question for, I think, the broad consumer market is price, right? Like, if these are... I mean, I know you probably had these conversations with parents where they're like, hey, I need to get a new laptop. I know you're in computers. What should I get? I have $400. And you're like, well, good luck. Here's what I would buy. And that's the way a lot of people make their, especially raw consumers, make their laptop purchasing decisions. Oh, yeah. So, like, if it's 3% slower, 10% slower, doesn't run old apps, but it runs Chrome, they probably don't care and will buy whichever one is cheaper, whether it's the AMD one, the Intel one, or the Snapdragon. For the more discerning audience, I think that changes pretty dramatically, and that depends a lot on what the x86 translation is, as Gordon says.
Well, and one good thing, and I like to look at this every once in a while too. If you just look up best selling laptops on Amazon, there's a page with their best sellers. And if you take Apple out of the equation, because Apple still,
but hold on, it's worth mentioning the first one is $850, and the number two is.
Yeah, well, the first one is the cheapest. Oh no, actually, there's a renewed MacBook Air, like $380. But yeah, it's like one of the cheapest MacBooks that you can get. But yeah, of the Windows-based devices, yeah, we got $300, $440, $300, $280. Actually, I think that might be a Chromebook. I can't tell. But yeah, so I mean, we're talking about, you got to be able to play in that low end space. For sure.
Yeah, and these are not all the looks are the laptops that will be coming out with the new Snapdragon X Elite will not be low end, low cost devices, okay. which is, it does feel like if I can go out and buy an XPS 14 or a Spectre X 360 and I can run everything that I run all day, and yeah, sure, maybe I don't get 3 days of battery life on it, but who the hell cares, right? If I can do everything I can do every day and nothing slows down and actually it's very snappy, why the hell would I buy this thing that costs just as much and it doesn't run this one stupid application that I've been holding on to for 10 years? I think that's going to be a problem. I also have a lot of questions too, because we don't really know how this thing works. I mean, can you run discrete graphics, right? I mean, I don't really know how it's constructed. Enough to see, like, will it really compete with what you're going to get on PC? Are you going to get USB 4? Probably. Are you going to get Thunderbolt 5 or 4? You know, and then we don't know display things. And also, I will say this, it's not going to launch for a couple months, so probably around Computex, but it feels like they're hyping it up a little too much. And also, The more recent stuff was like, hey, you can actually play games on this. So yeah, I guess if you consider gaming on Intel integrated graphics,
nobody's going to make ARM ports of their Windows games. Like it's just not, like, it's not going to happen.
Well, yeah, the games that they did show weren't ARM ports, right? I think it was actually translation.
Yeah,
happening.
They were either emulated or translated. I don't even know what they haven't even said how the hell it's done, but. But
it's running it, yeah, and it compares favorably to, you know, other integrated graphics solutions, which, you know, it's like, okay, cool. You don't need to blow it out of the water. You just need to kind of keep up.
It just needs to run.
Isn't it the same trap that Apple ran into, though? Because remember, they showed off like, oh, look, on ours. And again, you know, I would argue there were really a lot of compelling things on Apple Silicon that were very impressive. Gaming, yeah, it was like, wow, it's kind of cool it does that. But any discrete graphics from AMD or NVIDIA or Intel would kick the holy hell out of the Mac-based devices, right? And it was like pointless. Gaming on Mac is just like, you'd have to be insane. That would not be the primary purpose of buying any MacBook to play games.
And Apple does their own GPUs, which are arguably better than what's available in the Snapdragon parts, right? So,
like, I don't know. This is, you know, these are, again, the one thing, this is Nuvia, right? This is part of the Nuvia purchase from Qualcomm. So we'll see. We'll see when we get there.
Also, once again, depends on what you want out of that GPU performance.
Well, right.
Yeah.
I for me, if I'm going to buy a $1,000 laptop and it's not going to run my Windows software, then I'd probably buy a Mac or some subset of my Windows software. Why not just buy the Mac and get the Mac than buy the $1,000 Windows laptop that's going to be poorly. So their history of supporting ARM laptops on Windows is not great at this point. Cause you look at what happened with Windows 8, Windows 8.1, like those laptops immediately got left behind. Of course they were woefully underpowered compared to the modern ARM processors, but this feels like a product this feels like a CPU that's designed for people who might accidentally buy a Chromebook when they go to Best Buy instead of a Windows laptop.
Well, yeah, it does seem like it's reality may not match what the hype is right now, because it's an awful lot of money for something that you really, really have to value battery life and standby time. You know, that sort of like tablet like
which a lot of people do. Yeah, which a lot of people do.
I mean, enough to, you know, because I would argue most people, especially consumers, you don't go out and buy like a very nice high-end tablet and also a nice high-end laptop. They want a device that does everything. They don't want to have multiple devices. They have fixed budgets. If I can do better gaming and I can do adequate battery life and I can get all the applications I can get on my x86 laptop, why would I want to buy this ARM thing? It feels like it's the same trap again that sort of has doomed the previous attempts.
Well, I mean, it's early days. Once again, there could be more to show off for performance, for scaling, down on lower end devices or up on higher end devices. There's a lot. The next thing I'm interested in, though, is that, you know, you mentioned the launch around the Computex timeframe. I am interested how many appointments we're going to go to. I've already started booking appointments for Computex. How many we're going to go to, and they're going to be like, hey, check out our Snapdragon based offerings. I mean, I'll be curious.
And you never know, like the stuff that they show, like the hardware they bring out could be, like there could be something that could be amazing. It could be, you know, lighter and thinner and smaller and all the things than the existing laptops because the power consumption is lower. So there's more room for battery and, you know, I don't know. We'll see. Like I'm honestly, since Apple switched to ARM, I'm surprised that the iPad and the Mac are still separate devices, right? They're essentially the same under the hood, except for one has a touchscreen and one doesn't, and one runs the old OS and one runs the new OS. But they're much more the same now than they ever have been before. And like, there's a place for those hybrid devices, like the old Surface. What were the Surfaces with removable screens? Those were really cool, and nobody's really like there isn't really a successor to those types of hybrid separate devices on the Windows side anymore. That's not crazy expensive.
Oh, you mean like a this with the convertible?
Well, I mean, but with the one with the good keyboard and the battery in the keyboard as well, right? Like they did the
Surface
Elite or something.
Oh god, what was the name of that? Yeah, Mark
you mean like the Surface
that.
X? Oh, you Pro?
Had
well,
Studio?
Well,
no,
you're
still making
it was the one that had the battery, the extra battery in the keyboard, and so you would attach the screen and you would get access.
Oh, the Surface Book. Yeah,
yeah, Surface Book. Surface Book. Oh. There we go.
Pretty well. I mean, I guess I would call, because there's the rumors are that the Surface Pro 10 will be exclusively based on the Snapdragon part. Hmm. They're not going to make an x86 version of it. I have a hard time believing that unless Microsoft just doesn't want to sell Surface-based devices. It feels like to corporations because...
I could see that, though.
I guess, but they made that heavy push in, you know, enterprise customers, and I would argue we know how large companies are. You know, they're running ancient software, they're running management software, and they need to manage these fleets. Yeah. And if they can't be managed the same way they can manage their Intel or AMD hardware, are they really going to want to buy these Snapdragon based Surface things that are that the IT department now has to support by hand rather than automating it? Well, I think that's a problem because x86 really does have the management thing that, you know, Apple has always been terrible at, right? You can't manage Apple fleets the way you can with Intel based fleets. It just doesn't work. If you have 20,000 devices out there, you're not managing Apple devices the way you are with Intel devices, because they've just all of the stuff to manage all the software security is out there. It's also vast majority of it's horrible, but it's still, you know, for a corporation trying to manage all those laptops in the field, it definitely is an advantage. And I can't see Microsoft not making an x86 version of it. So I don't believe it.
Well, the Surface agenda, for lack of a better word, has changed over the past couple of years. So like I would say they're, you know, they've kind of downsized their product offerings. Panos is no longer there, you know, like, so yeah. I do think that at least that Surface strategy is probably changing a little bit. So who knows? Maybe this is just like, oh, hey, we have this Surface that runs ARM just to show off what a good experience could be, right? Like a flagship kind of thing. And they don't expect to sell a ton of them. They just want to have, you know, something out there.
And the Windows laptop ecosystem has improved dramatically since they launched the Surface, right? Like if they built the Surface as a market, as a, hey, here's what you should be doing on Windows to push the rest of the market in the direction they wanted to go, things like having, you know, using the Windows driver for trackpads and having good touchscreen support and all of those types of things, like maybe mission accomplished, and they're ready to move away from that market.
What do you think is kind of really behind this, though? I mean, you know, to be fair, I know a lot of people think it's, you know, that's the classic burn against the PCs. It's Intel, it's Windows and Intel-based processors. You know, going back many, many years ago, Microsoft has always tried to get away, or at least tried to support other architectures besides x86, right? You had, I can't even remember what the hell it was, but you know, Windows NT ran on other than x86, right? I mean, well, what do you think they're trying to push here? I mean, I don't think really, look, why care about Apple so much?
Qualcomm's an enormous company, and Qualcomm, whether Microsoft cares or not, Qualcomm is big and cares enough that they probably can convince Microsoft to care, right? Well, Microsoft, here's the thing. Microsoft doesn't want Apple to continue eating into the laptop market share, right? Like, remember, this is a market that Apple works in, and the laptops for them are a tiny part of their business. For Microsoft, laptops are an enormous part of their OS business, at least on the consumer side.
I mean, it's the majority of PCs, I believe.
Servers, right? So
for consumer,
So, you know, it's important that they stem that tide. Not that it's growing at an enormous rate, but you don't want the biggest part of your business to be the thing that your main competitor just is ambivalent about, right? So anything they can do, they're going to engage in everything. They're going to work with AMD on APU based laptops. They're going to work with Qualcomm on ARM based laptops. They're going to keep working with Intel on, like, they, Mike, this is the Microsoft secrets. They love everybody. Also, they hate everybody.
Yeah. I know here's the other question though. Can our open approach work? Is this going to be a problem? Let me restate that. How much of a problem is it that we have, you know, this very open approach to it? Is this Microsoft trying to get away from leaving this legacy x86 stuff behind and the messiness of too many damn things that they have to deal with? Are they trying to get away from the open architecture of the PC in a lot of ways?
It doesn't feel like that for me, at least. I mean, it's a potential future. We had plenty of people in the chat, or a couple people, who brought up RISC-V, right? And there's always that that thing as well. So I mean, I think it's just like, hey, be open to new opportunities in the future, but does that mean that x86 is going away? It doesn't feel like that to me.
I don't think they're I think the desire to close the PC as an ecosystem has ebbed and flowed over the years at Microsoft, right? There's definitely like a early 2010s Ballmer era Microsoft that wanted to lock down the PC and sell every Windows application through the Microsoft Store and, you know, make the future of the PC the same as iOS or Android or macOS to a large extent at this point. And I think that's probably waned as they've looked at more of a services-based business for Microsoft.
Services are where they seem to really care and put all their effort.
But they're not great at services, as we talked about last week. Like,
I mean, everyone has an Office license, though. You know,
do they?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, a lot of people have Office. It's like the default.
I mean, if you deal with lawyers, you have to have Office because the lawyers always get upset when you open a contract with Google Docs and it jacks up all the bullet points and subheads. But I think this is just the open ecosystem doing what open ecosystems do, right? There's new chips, Microsoft will support it, and if it sells, then they'll continue supporting it. And when they sell like 800 of these laptops, then you will stop getting Windows 11 updates in 2025, and your $1,000 laptop is suddenly locked where it is right now.
You'll just have to pay for the updates.
Oh yeah, it's, yeah, for right. The first update is $64, and the second one's 122.
Yeah. They should have gone that way.
You know what? We should actually clarify in that. We did, although we were very hot about it, and I do want to point out that the money that what they want to charge for Windows 10 support, that
we talked about last week,
commercial customers at this point. We don't know how much they're going to charge consumers, but I'm
or if they'll even let you pay.
They may just simply go. And this again gets to the problem here, because the nice thing about supporting Qualcomm and supporting this new architecture for Windows is it feels like they can leave legacy behind. Because, you know, one of the problems with the PC is you have this huge tent where you've got people running Ivory Bridge, Sandy Bridge, and, you know, Arendelle-based devices, which just, you've just got so much legacy crap that everybody has to support. It's always breaking. The drivers are breaking. UEFIs aren't getting updated. By going to this new architecture and pushing really hard, and also, by the way, you know, we're gonna cut off everything from Kaby Lake down and Ryzen 2000 down, they can sort of eliminate a lot of the legacy support. That is just, I get the feeling that Microsoft thinks it's just baggage around their neck. They can't really compete with, you know, modern operating systems if they have to worry about somebody running, you know, a 15-year-old PC, and they need to run the latest operating system with it. So leaving legacy behind does feel like the what Microsoft has been trying to do the last few years, because I honestly, it is a problem, right? You can't support these infinitely old computers and expect everything to be awesome on the newest thing. That's what works so well for Apple again, because, you know, they have Rosetta, which they've always said is temporary, but I can tell you they are going to pull the rug out on x86 support any day now, because they just don't want to deal with it. They just want to get rid of it. They don't want to pay developers to support it, and they're going to make people just basically throw away x86 Max all day because they don't want to deal with it.
I mean, it's they're reaching the end of the time at this point, too. They got 2 years probably at the outside.
Even the M1 is like nearing the end of its life cycle already, which
three,
is kind of
it's
insane.
3 years old. You're just saying it's time to let old things die. Like going full Kylo Ren over there.
Yeah, but I understand why, especially for Microsoft, because you're looking at billions of devices. But at the same time, it's just very uneasy, right? Because you're just creating e-waste, so it sucks.
Well, and you're abandoning the traditional strength of the platform.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll see. More to come.
I want to see reviews.
Yeah, reviews. Yeah. How reviews. Many actual makers, you know, go in on having these options, price points, all that kind of stuff. So more to come, and I think we'll regroup and talk about it a little bit later. But we should move on. Because we have a PSA of sorts, Gordon.
Oh, right.
There was a little bit of a red flag going up. People, there was hints of a new AM5 Plus socket.
Oh, that sounds dramatic.
That surfaced in microcode recently, and it was like, AMD is looking to refresh their socket already.
But wait, I thought they release a socket and then they use it for like 100 years.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And you never have to buy another motherboard, right?
Gordon, what's happening here?
Well, somebody basically spotted in microcode that they took apart that there's an AM5 plus. And of course, everybody got out there, jumped to conclusion mats, and they automatically assumed because there was an AM3, then there was an AM3 plus, there was an AM2, there was an AM2 plus socket. They assumed that, whoa, we're not going to get all of the CPU support that we've gotten previously with AM4, especially in looking at the Tom's Hardware story.
Which I linked to in the description.
Which you linked to in the description, which is headline, AMD may have a new platform for upcoming Ryzen CPUs, AM5 plus socket, and Granite Ridge CPUs listed in a microcode extraction tool. AM5 plus platform could come with new features, written by Anton Shylov over at Tom's Hardware. And immediately down in the comment section, the very first comment
is, go to the comment section.
AM5 already outdated after one generation?
Oh, yeah,
it's the worst.
It'd be two after two, theoretically. And then, of course, people are basically on the internet getting like, oh, my God, I can't believe that. You know, AM4 is still supported, and you've gotten like, I don't know, 400 CPU support on it. It's still being supported now. But AM5 plus indicates that AM5 is only going to get two generations of chips, and then you'll have an improved socket, and backwards compatibility will be questionable at that point. So there's a little bit of a freak out. It doesn't look like that's true, because the person who apparently disassembled the microcode came out, and I think I do that embedded tweet. This is from Plato. I'm going to really massacre this name. I'll just say at Plato Maniac. And it's responding to the AM5 plus, you know, that was written on Twitter X. Regarding this,
I love Twix.
I only like
the left Twix, though. I'm a left Twix guy.
Oh, man, I'm a right Twix guy.
Really? Oh, then we can share. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Regarding this, I've seen some articles mentioning a rumored, quote, AM5 plus socket based on the change log of MCE. However, the plus symbol there simply referred to AM5 and newer/future platforms, not an actual socket change by AMD. He didn't say but I'm inserting that because that's the way I would say it. I forgot about the old AM3 plus when writing this. So basically, the person who kind of kicked off this was, you know, as we know, you on Twix, unless you are a blue check, you really can't write really long things, so you have to abbreviate the hell out of everything. So it looks like the person was really saying AM5 and future, or AM5 spelled out
like
plus,
greater
just basically
than.
Did plus.
Yeah.
Greater
yeah.
than. You know, there's this new microcode basically saying, no, I didn't mean that there's an AM5 plus. This just simply means that for newer sockets.
So basically, because like a modern socket comes with additional pins, right? Like there's stuff that's unused in the AM5 socket now that they can use for whatever future need they have, presumably.
Yeah, they've done that before. I think with Plus, they had, you know, reserved pins. I don't know how many pins are reserved in AM5, but that was the fear that, you know, they were doing this immediately and it was going to be dead. The official thing, AMD's always said we're going to support AM5 through 2025, right? At least.
Yeah,
that is what they've said. We also reached out to AMD for comment. Anything from there, Gordon?
Yeah, the comment was, we don't comment on future products, dude. We're like, come on. We don't talk. You cannot trick us into talking about future stuff. So they're not saying anything. But, you know, clearly they have said AM5 is through 2025. And the fact that you have this person saying that I screwed up by saying plus, I didn't imply there was a new socket change. This is basically talking about future products. It sounds to me like, you know, a little bit of a nothing burger, and people overreacting a little bit to this shorthandness of Twix.
Also, so quick to dismiss the track record of AM4 right, at this early on, be like, what the hell? Look, you know, because AM4, I mean, continues to, we've had debates on like whether that's good for AMD or not, because there's been rumors of even more AM4 based chips maybe coming in the future as well, and AM4 does not seem to want to die. So
how long has AM4 lasted before, you know, like AM5?
Was it 2018?
Yeah, all the Ryzens, right?
Yeah, wasn't that Ryzen 1000? Was that 2018?
Wow. Basically 1000 through 5000. Yeah. And then now they're doing some newer chips sort of on it. But
2017. Chet says 2017.
That means it's longer than like Socket 7 and some of, like, some of the real old stuff that lasted forever. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, it exceeds... what, slot ones? Slot ones got a decent, I mean, it was a, it felt like a 5-year run on slot one boards.
Was it slot one through Pentium 4, like Pentium 2, 200 through Pentium 4?
Yeah.
So that was like 98, 96.
So 2, 3, and 4. Yeah. And although, you know, there were chipset changes that sort of broke things, but you did get a lot. And yeah, Socket 7 and Super 7 got a pretty good run as well. But AM4 definitely is I would say, is exceeded even those older platforms. I would agree with you there.
Well, yeah. If past performance is any future indication, then they are saying or hopefully theoretically going to support AM5 for a while. So this seems to be kind of a
So nothing real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, nothing real. But, you know, the main thing, again, we won't talk about it because, you know, oftentimes people will only see the initial headlines and the people screaming on, you know, Twitter or Reddit. About, oh my God, I can't believe they're already going to kill AM5. I'm going to wait for AM5 plus motherboards before I buy one now. There's no proof that any of that is true. So I wouldn't overreact to any of that at this point. So it's worth putting it out there because you have to put out good information, not just the misinformation.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for doing your duty, Gordon. That's why we love you.
So if I wanted to overreact about something, is the
we have a shirt
story.
For you. Oh, really? Average Pony.
Oh,
yeah.
Sweet.
RetroShine actually gave us an idea over on the chat. Says the jump to conclusion mouse mat.
Oh, yeah. You should. Yeah, that would be good.
That would be good.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Would you just, it would have to be one of those like full desk jump to conclusion.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. You got
to. Because you'd have to have a square for each thing. Like immediately start, you know, typing. Well, first, and then one of the squares could be lock, hit caps lock key. You know, because that's the only thing you can do.
Yeah, you need to hit that caps lock key.
And you need one that's like Microsoft makes a bad decision, or like Intel suddenly consumer unfriendly. You know, there's all sorts of options.
Oh,
suddenly.
Yeah. We should definitely dive into that. So thank you, RetroShine. Yeah.
And
you so
then one of the
idea.
Squares, I think it should definitely should be is even though all of this was incorrect, I'm still angry. No, there's no AM5 Plus or no, this didn't happen. And by the way, NVIDIA will make future gaming GPUs.
What?
I'm still angry about it, even though I was screwing about
it. Because it still could happen. Still could
angry
happen.
Despite all evidence.
No. Even though it's completely proven to be incorrect and everybody was wrong, I'm still angry about that. That definitely should be one of the squares because... You know, you would have done it if we weren't screaming about it. Would be the classic response.
What we need to do is make a Game of Life knockoff.
Oh God!
Where you start at the beginning as a normal person, then you just get angrier and angrier the more you.
Oh, you mean like a board game?
Like a board game, yeah.
And then you pick up outrage ponies.
You pick up outrage.
You're adding instead of a car, you're in a carriage and you add outrage ponies.
Yeah, whoever has the most outrage ponies at the end wins.
There's got to be a way to make a cheap board game and cheap. And also a way to make
we should make a
cards.
Kickstarter.
I've always wanted to make a...
We could have our own Kickstarter, you know?
Yeah.
Right, because you could make like a PC gaming, PC enthusiast card game. Remember how that's classic?
Oh, yeah. You've had this good idea for a while.
Yeah, like a deck builder?
You have a card. Yeah, it would be deck builder, but the card would have strengths like 1080 Ti would have this and, you know, like strength hair plus, you know, and then you would have to build a computer and then you would have to compete against somebody else's computer. Like,
oh, I like this.
That's pretty good.
I like your board game too. Yeah. I really like the board game, Outrage Pony board game, because no matter what, it'd be like a Monopoly board where everything is just, it always ends up in people's.
Is the horse just like really angry on the cover? It's just like, ah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's only one setting for the internet and that's anger. So
Exactly. Well, speaking of anger, Gordon, I just barely got a PCIe 5 SSD. I'm still waiting on a PCIe 5 GPU, but PCIe 7 is already here.
What
the hell? I guess I got to buy a new motherboard, huh, Gordon? What's
it
up
is
with
pretty
this?
Nuts, right? I mean, that. So, you know, the news in the last week is the PCI SIG has said, hey, we're working on PCIe 7.0. We just got to the 0.5 mark, and we expect to have PCIe 7.0 done by 2025. So they'll release the PCIe 7.0 spec next year, and it will essentially double the bandwidth from PCIe 6, by the way, which we haven't even seen on
desktop
or mobile
yet. Where's PCIe 6?
Yeah, so PCIe 5 is, what, 128 gigs? Is that gigs second? Oh, God. Bandwidth. And then PCIe 6 is doubles that to 256. And PCIe 7 will jump to 512.
Oh, I've heard these numbers before.
I was going to say, does this mean it's 64 times faster than PCI Express 1?
Well, there's actually, you could look this up. There's actually a, I like the one with the color coding, which is pretty nice. You pull it up, Willis.
The chart.
Swoop up. Are we this bandwidth starved? Is this all GPUs and CPUs? Is this what's happening? Is this why we need this bandwidth? Or is it just like, hey, we always have to have more bandwidth?
Yeah. You know, so the thing is, I've covered PCI SIG for a long time, and you want to talk about one of the most reliable, most anger inducing standards, boards that's out there. And that's generally PCI because they have long had a philosophy of, you know, if we build it, they will come. And, you know, the classic comparison I would say for PCIe is you don't wait until the traffic on your freeways, it turns into Los Angeles before you go, hey, we should build new freeways, right? So the PCIe SIG is always constantly adding bandwidth because they understand that you don't wait for things to clog up before you try to increase the bandwidth. So basically, every 3 years, they basically double the bandwidth. PAM4 was added with, what, PCIe 4, I think? And that's the signaling that is in PCIe. And they basically, I think I read a story on Tom's Hardware there for PCIe 7, it'll be a clock doubling, but it's the same signaling to get to PCIe 7. But they do this because they don't wait. And if you wait, it just sucks because now suddenly everything is choked off. But PCIe 7 will enable things like, I don't know, 800 gigabit Ethernet.
But that's a real thing. That's the thing that people use in data centers for AI stuff. Like latency and speed between nodes AI compute clusters is really important. It's hard to do.
Right. You could obviously see, desktop PCs getting some form of that. I mean, we probably won't see 800 gig Ethernet immediately, but you build the roads before the traffic gets bad, and that's always been their philosophy. So that's why they have PCIe 7 before we've even seen PCIe 6 for us. And remember, PCIe will scale from you use it where you need it because the standard is here. It'll scale from data center all the way down to handheld gaming. Right.
And into like external cables and stuff like that eventually too, right?
Yeah.
So what's the like, do you have a sense of where the bottleneck is currently? Like if you're on a PCIe 3 board and you put a 4090 in it, is your slow PCIe 3 gonna choke out your video card?
I think there are probably will be some situations where it will hurt performance somewhat.
I feel like I've seen some testing, yeah.
Okay.
But at the same time, if you're really putting a 4080 super into your POS system, there will probably be so many other bottlenecks elsewhere in the system, it won't matter. You'll still get the benefit of a much faster graphics card. But no, there are no practical limits that we're seeing. There's no, I don't think you're getting choked off anywhere in a modern PC. Yeah. And, even for SSDs, it's, arguably, there's no PCIe GPUs, but who cares? Because you don't really need the bandwidth at this point. We thought it's the least you can get PCIe 5 SSDs, but it's faster, but you know, due to operating system limitations and how everything runs in the world, it doesn't seem to make that much difference. You don't have to go out and buy a 14 gig per second Gen 5 SSD to play, and most people are fine with Gen 4. So,
which we were talking about the SSD speeds. I got a good question real quick from Royale with Cheese in the chat. It says, why do we seem to be stopped at by 16 links? How come the part you know, like we're mapping out PCIe 7 and we're not bumping it up to 32 by 32 or something? Like,
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure, but my guess would be you just don't need the lanes, because as it gets wider and wider, it electrically gets harder. You know, if you were to go to 32 lanes on a desktop board, I can't imagine you'd be looking at a very, very long slot. And also the warning, running the traces to it seems like it probably would be excessive and very expensive to do. And it does make me wonder, which is the reason I want to talk about it, because we are still really at 0.5 on this. PCIe 7 is not final release yet, but...
Yeah, we're barely on 0.5.
Yeah, we're barely on yeah. Remember when PCIe Gen 5 came out, prices of motherboards got very expensive, and it got very complicated because they had to use all these retimers and redrivers. The board layers had to get, you know, like, they had to add board layers for some of them, and it just made motherboards very expensive to support PCIe Gen 5. You know, and frankly, for a lot of people, it's like, you know what, Gen 4 or even 3, it probably wasn't worth the squeeze to go to Gen 5, I mean, some people would say. So I do wonder, as they start to look at like Gen 6, is that going to be smoother than the move to Gen 5, or is it going to be like, oh my God. So now you've gone from $500 motherboards for like a mid-range board is $500 now. Are we going to go to like $700 for a mid-range board? Because to get to PCIe Gen 6, it's going to be pricey. I haven't really talked to any board makers to see whether they sort of think it's going to suck to try to get to Gen 6 and Gen 7 as well. But you could imagine the signaling gets very, very difficult as you're hitting this kind of bandwidth. So it's possible we may not even really push it for many, many, many years. So maybe we'll see Gen 6 sooner rather than later. God, but again, we don't even have Gen 5 GPUs. Yeah,
not really. And Gen 5 is usually like one slot on your board right now at most. Maybe an add-in card or a 16 slot and a M2 slot.
I would say, I mean, for video production, we do have a use case where, you know, we're throwing around large files, and even then, like, we haven't been like, we're still fine with Gen 4 for the most part. Yeah. So.
Well, the interesting thing to me about the higher specs is that you get more bandwidth per lane. So it means that the things like the M2 cards, which are, I think, limited by 4, right? You get equivalent to by 16, like, a PCIe 5.0 by 4 slot is the same speed as a by 16 slot that's PCIe 3, I think, right?
So yeah, you can see it in the little colorful chart we have.
Yeah, so it's a situation where those more condensed uses are more valuable, and I think that's why we're seeing like the M2 slots being PCIe 5 on high-end motherboards right now. It's weird though, because I still don't fully understand how everybody seems to wire those slots up. Like you could buy a motherboard that has some PCIe 4 slots, some PCIe 5 slots, some PCIe 4 M2s, some PCIe 5 M2s, and you have to go in and look at a block diagram to see how that stuff's wired up to the system to see if you're actually going to get the benefit of the higher speed, or what weird thing's going to happen when you use which slot, because sometimes like your SATA ports turn off, or your by 16 PCI Express slot goes down to a by 8 or whatever weirdness it is. And like, it feels like we're looking for a bigger number at the cost of a lot of usability. And like, I don't know what we gain at this point from doing all this extra work and making these much more expensive motherboards and making everything much more complicated for what seems to be a pretty negligible performance increase on most of the current hardware.
Well, you know, that actually could be a potential benefit. I could see if, like, say, we move to PCIe Gen 6. So now if you obviously would have to have a CPU that supports it, because that's where the vast majority of PCIe is. Some of it's in the Southbridge too, but knowing that most of the devices will still be Gen 5 or Gen 4, if they go to Gen 6, which is backwards compatible, you could run with fewer lanes. It should open up more additional bandwidth on boards by going to Gen 6.
Like across right, on all the slots rather than just on a limited number of special slots.
Yeah, because if it feels like you could then add more devices that are on that board at a higher bandwidth without having to add more lanes. So that I could see that would being be nice. A potential benefit.
Yeah, that would be That's nice. True. Yeah, because we were looking at motherboards recently, and I ran into this when I did the 14th gen review, where the board that we got in was like, oh, if you run the Gen 5 SSD in the top slot, it forces your the top PCIe slot, the GPU is where you would put it, into by 8. And it's like, okay, well, what do you want? Do you want a Gen 5 SSD or do you want to buy 16 GPU? And it's like, that's a horrible choice. So that
could be a nice side benefit. And actually, I just did a build with my daughter, and we use a Gen 4 SSD, and I had the option like, do I use the Gen 5 slot or do I put it in Gen 4?
Yeah,
so I left the Gen 5 slot for the M.2 open, and I put it in Gen 4 because what's the point of occupying it? And later on, maybe we could drop a Gen 5 SSD in there.
Well, and then the other thing that we saw at a GDC is a lot of there's Microsoft and the GPU vendors are pushing stuff like work graphs that moves a lot of the work off of the CPU and directly to the GPU for certain types of like shader loads and stuff like that. And those, my assumption is, as the GPU becomes a more like less of a secondary processor and more of a primary processor, which is what obviously NVIDIA and AMD want, the increased bandwidth may be more important in those as those loads shift.
Yeah.
And then also, I suppose, as we get to more of that direct storage, hopefully one day will actually be effective and useful. You can move textures into the graphics card memory much, much faster, hopefully. I mean, it takes multiple years for developers and everybody to catch up to it. But it would be nice, hopefully, if that happened.
Well, we actually did get a question on that from friend of the show, Ivan Ramanazov, asked, is there any news on direct storage adoption in games? Was there anything from GDC?
I didn't see anything.
For PC games specifically.
I didn't actually look for anything on that front.
I feel like when we talked with Alex from Digital Foundry a couple months ago, too, he was just like, nah, there's other things that have kind of supplanted it, the need for it on the PC side. So
the SteamDB list of direct storage games, it's getting longer.
Oh, okay.
Horizon Forbidden West is
New
on
World?
That list.
Huh.
New World is on that. Diablo 4 Forspoken, Ratchet and Clank, Rift Apart, Voxel Horizon. It's still limited. I mean,
a dozen games.
The thing that I think has happened on a lot of PC games is that the actual storage isn't as much the gate as things like shader compile time, because a lot of games just compile shaders every time you launch them, whether they don't cache them particularly well for whatever reason, and that turns out to be the thing that makes the game take a long time to launch. So
We do have a very pertinent question from friend of the show VC Jester, asked how much SSD bandwidth do you need, Gordon, to download the latest skins on World of Warships? all of it. The answer is all of it.
All of it, I guess, right?
Yeah, Fortnite lets you just download all of the cosmetics. You can download like a 35 gig pack that has every skin that's in the game,
even if you bought it or not.
So there, you can't play them, but you don't have to download them on demand, so you don't have skins popping
in. Well, there you go.
If their servers are slow,
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right. Well, last question for me: do you think we'll see any sort of PCIe 6 motherboard news at Computex?
No, I think it's too early. I think that it has to be paired with, either a new PCH or a new Southbridge from AMD, as well as a new CPU, depending on how they want to configure it. So I don't think PCIe 6 will happen until 2025, it feels like.
Wait, I heard AM5 Plus has...
No. People only hear that bit of the show, and then they're like, wait, AM5 Plus, I missed all that.
No.
Yeah, I'm
no,
waiting. That's what I'm waiting for, is AM5 Plus in 2026, and that's what I'll buy, because, by the way, 2026 with PCIe 6. Yeah. I was always sad that they didn't do that. Remember, I was like hoping...
Oh, yeah, what was that?
We were going to see AM5 with DDR5 with PCIe 5. 5.5... The AMD 555 initiative.
On May 5th. Yeah. So 5555. Yeah.
So it's the day after Star Wars Day. We have AMD Day. God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, that is a classic example. And I will say all hardware companies should never listen to advice from journalists.
Yeah.
Basically, you should basically like, oh, wait, that sounds very interesting. We'll do 180 degrees because that's typically the correct actual thing you should do.
You're right.
I'm
sure
they're wrong. Right? That's.
Yeah, I'm sure Dr. Lisa Su is watching right now, taking notes, saying everything Gordon is saying, do the exact opposite.
The Costanza method. You want to do the Costanza method? Yeah,
yeah, that's the way to do it.
All right. Well, we should. Anything else on PCIe 7?
No, just it's cool stuff. I mean, obviously, data center, they're going to love it because they can use that excessive amount of bandwidth there. But for us sad people down on desktop, mobile. Laptops, it's not earth shattering, but again, you have to give PCI SIG the credit because you think about it. Yeah, it was painful to do the cost for it and motherboards, but it comes out, it works for the most part, and everybody's happy. So that there's very few things that are on the PC that have been as reliable as the PCI SIG. So it's worth giving him the shout out there.
I want to know with all this bandwidth if the traces are going to get so hot you have to put cooling on the traces, right? Ooh. on the lane traces,
or just you go to like 10 layer boards for consumer and now it's $800 or something like that. So
look, we're getting closer to the hey, you buy a GPU and just put the computer inside the GPU territory at this point.
Soon.
Yeah, you just like a little tiny SBC that you attach to the bottom of the graphics card. Yeah, and exactly. That's it. Yeah.
Love it. All right, let's move over to Q&A. We got some good questions that we didn't get to last week, so I want to get to those. If you're watching live at PC World in the chat, that's one of the best ways to get your questions in and get them seen. If you're watching or listening to this later, there is a link to our Discord in the description. Go over to the Discord, and we have an awesome channel where you can drop in questions. And hopefully we will answer them later. We got a couple super chats that I want to get to. First one is from friend of the show, VC Jester, gave us a $2 super chat. Thank you so much. And he's got a question that we actually answered a little bit earlier, but I think he came in a little late to the show. Which of you is the dude and which is Walter? So I think we already discussed.
Oh, wait, I know that. Like, yeah. I got the Walter watch.
Yeah. Gordon's had the Walter attitude for 20 plus years at this point.
No, I kind of think like they actually stole that from me. If you think about it, about nothing was.
I've never seen you smash a Corvette up though. That's the one thing I'm waiting on. That's only a matter of time.
And I like In-N-Out. I do love In-N-Out. So the one over by Radford, is that the one?
Oh yeah, that's a good one. Down the street from the Ralphs. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, and then we got a five New Zealand. I believe NZ is New Zealand.
New Zealand
dollars. Thank you so much from Slow Hardware. Said all right, 7980XE versus 10980XE. Same clock speed. What difference does the smart cache make? I have to look up these parts.
Good Lord, I'm trying to think. 10980XE, so basically a Skylake X.
Yep, versus a 7980XE. That's Skylake, yeah.
Is it worth doing the upgrade? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so we're talking about 18 cores on the 7980XE versus the 10980XE.
Yeah, no, they were almost exactly virtually the same. The only thing is the 10980 was like, hey, we're slashing prices. That's our technology improvement. So that was, and you got to give it to Intel because they went from whatever $1,800 for that Skylake X part to, or $1,500, and they made like, hey, we're going to make it $600 because it's actually slower than a Ryzen 16 core part. So,
well, and actually the cache looks the same. It's at least on this Intel page, it's saying 24 megabyte.
Yeah, if I remember, they were literally the same thing practically. So maybe TDP's some clock bumps. Same. And again, I'm running a 7980 in this POS machine here.
Classic.
And I considered throwing in a 10980. It's like, but what was the point? So
you get higher boost clocks on the 10980.
So it's and lower prices, higher boost clocks and lower. Yeah, that was it. So I guess if you get it cheap enough, maybe. But
going up
the 7980 is again one of those Skylake parts that actually supported Windows 11. Why, we don't know, but it did actually support Windows 11.
The U.S. military owns a bunch of them, probably.
I just don't know. So
We got a $5 Canadian super chat from a friend of the show, Coffee. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just in. Except for the pricing of their leak products, in that case, AMD is like, price our products exactly what Gordon said on the Full Nerd. Yeah. So.
Wait, what? I think
they're saying your track record with pricing products. Actually, do you remember what were the CPUs that you, when you were doing your dollars per thread chart, that you like predicted exactly because you had that in? What was that?
God, I can't remember.
I can't remember. Maybe it was Threadripper. I think it was Threadripper. You were able to extrapolate the core counts, and you were like, "Well, this is exactly the price that they're gonna charge for it."
And Gordon's predictions are more accurate than the Simpsons episodes.
I thought that was that SSD one that I was super happy with, where I landed within like $5 of the price of an SSD a year later. That was,
yeah,
but yeah. No, I don't.
We should play Full Nerd Prices Right before Computex and see what
price right now. Like that.
Yeah.
All right, I am going to switch over to the fine folks on the Discord. We got some questions over here. CauseMC has a very pertinent question. Why are laptops not dead like consoles, Adam?
Oh, boy.
Well, oh, my.
I mean, laptops are PCs, just like consoles are PCs. So, yeah. Good. Yeah, Will's about to step away. No, I mean, I would say laptops are a thriving part of the business. Right?
It's most people's main. If they like,
yeah, we love
just
desktops.
Use phones. A lot of people just use phones.
A lot
now.
Of people use phones. We love the desktop and we love DIY desktop. Yeah, of course.
Is that true? A lot of people use phones.
I mean, I will tell you, there was a period when I was doing my startup. My phone was probably my main computer. I used it for when you're doing that kind of job, you're doing a lot of emails and talking to people, it turns out, and a phone is the thing that you always have on you, so it's the thing you use.
Yeah, but it wasn't like you didn't have access to a full service computer though, right?
No, but I often would go, like, if I had stuff that I had to do out in the world, I wouldn't take like a laptop with me in case I had to respond to somebody or answer a call or something.
I would just use
my phone for that.
Did you bring a keyboard?
No, I can fast type on the thumb. My thumbs are agile.
I'm a swipe guy.
Yeah. Really a swipe.
I
huh?
I've Weird. Been a swipe guy.
But yeah, so I think laptops are most people, if you ask them to show you a picture of a computer and you show them a desktop computer and a server and a tablet and a console and a laptop, they're going to point at the laptop.
Yeah. And that's what people forget is, and this is the problem with the PC gaming and enthusiast areas is people think that desktops are the biggest thing. And frankly, desktops are what? Probably, I don't even know, but I would just guessing 20%, 15% of sales. And then a lot of, and honestly, the only time you probably see a decent amount of desktops is when you include, you know, the corporate desktops that are sold to hospitals and businesses, you know, those little POS machines that they just hook up to a monitor and sit on a desk forever, hooked up to a laser printer. And the actual gaming desktop enthusiast desktop market is very small in the grand scheme of things, but the people who buy them are very loud. So very, very loud and very proud. Well, that's the reason why sometimes people think that desktop PCs are just like huge, but you know, gaming laptops, I'm sure outsell, you know, gaming desktops at this point worldwide. And the laptops are the vast majority of computers bought by consumers.
And just to be clear, that's the way it's been since I started working in this space. Like in
really?
Maybe like 2000, 2002, maybe desktops were still the bulk. But as soon as Wi-Fi took off and Intel's, I can't remember what it's called now.
Centrino.
Yeah, as soon as they started doing those Centrino ads, laptops became the bulk of the market. To the point that when I was taking the Windows XP meeting with Microsoft, they were like, yeah, we're really primarily focused on laptop for this release. And when they handed, like in the old days for an OS release, Microsoft would hand the early reviewers their reference laptop. That was the first time it was a laptop. Prior to that, it was they'd send over like an HP desktop machine or something like that for you to do your I mean, they wanted you to do all your testing on their reference machine. Obviously, you'd install it on a bunch of other stuff and see how bad it was.
Yeah, I think actually laptops surpassed desktop sales in about that, what, mid-2000s?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And it's just continued to grow, so...
I mean,
yeah.
So the one thing about the desktop PC and especially the enthusiast PC space is that those are high margin, high dollar parts that like the manufacturers, you know, you have always paved the way for what the rest of the market will look like in 2, 3, 4, 5 years. But it's you know, it's like the tuner cars and the muscle cars and all the, you know, it's the same thing. It's the enthusiast always lead the way.
Well, it's the sexy thing too, right? We're talking about the consoles, you know, playing in the similar space. We're talking about a lot of younger kids are not looking at consoles because they're seeing their favorite streamers on desktop PCs. Like, I don't think that same adoption would apply for laptop. Laptop is more utilitarian because it can do pretty much everything.
It's a pickup truck.
Yeah. So just different space. Different space for sure.
Well, wait, the desktop PC is a pickup truck?
I guess the
truck,
desktop's or? The pickup. The desktop's like the panel van at this point, probably.
No, I would say it's the pickup truck. And arguably the reason is, it's funny because
we're like a muscle sedans, car, right?
Sedans outsell all cars, but the number one and number two cars traditionally in the United States have been pickup trucks.
Like Ford F-150 and
F-150, you know, Silverado. A lot of people buy a lot of trucks because, you know, trucks are damn cool. Let's be honest, right? I mean, I wish I had a Tacoma. I mean, if I could afford one, but it'd be nice to have just because it's cool.
I mean, sometimes you need to carry like six things of mulch in the back of your pickup truck.
Yeah.
And
nobody does that. Yeah. No, you're going to go to Safeway or the grocery store and you're like,
you got to get all those pizzas at Costco.
Look, it would be nice to be able to jam a mattress in my car without folding it. That's all I'm saying.
So does that make a laptop the coupe?
I think the laptop's like the van, right? It's the minivan.
No, it's the wagon, the station wagon.
Well, station wagons are dead, dude.
Dang it.
Nobody makes station wagons anymore.
Yeah.
It's an SUV.
I don't know where we're going.
It's the SUV. Anyway, move on.
We have a question from friend of the show, Bob Jones, asks, do you think they will make a GPU with SSD storage that has a direct path to the GPU die for the fastest possible direct storage solution? So actually,
it was one of the things that was originally pitched as part of direct storage, right?
Well, and Asus actually does have a GPU that you know, you can attach a PCI slot to, but it's using the extra lanes on the like, it's not actually attaching the GPU
it's attaching to the main system.
So it's so we're kind of there. The form factor is there, but it's not actually getting the benefit of plugging directly into the GPU.
Well, so it would be for really specific workloads. It would be for like AI stuff if you were doing that, because like Windows, think about how much trouble Windows has scheduling P&E cores on an Intel machine, or managing the differences in cache on an X3D Ryzen. Like if it has to know the difference between where the storage is based on how it should run the application, that's for people doing really specialized high compute workloads.
Yeah.
Yeah. You remember AMD did that maybe 8 years ago, 6 years ago. They had a graphics card that they had, you know, storage on. And I believe, you know, again, it was similar concept. So the interesting thing would be, you know, because you're still gated by, you know, a Gen 5 interface, which for a graphics card is slow as hell. It's just not enough bandwidth. It'd be interesting to see if a graphics card maker could integrate NAND over a wider bus on the card itself, just to use as local storage. But you know, again, you're paying for NAND, you're paying heat, thermals, and everything. But and if nobody's going to use it, what's the point, right? It would take, you know, it would have to take a massive initiative where, like, you know, either AMD does it on all their cards or NVIDIA does it. And then the game developers then have to take advantage of it. So, but yeah. I think that'd be kind of, I mean, yeah, direct, would you do direct attach storage? Not, well, you know, not doing, not over M.2, because that would suck, but the NAND directly integrated into a graphics card.
I think that's more likely. And then they have some sort of like high speed onboard shader cache or something like that, so that they just bypass in the driver of the shader cache, the shader compiling and the stuff like that. That's GPU bound and is taking a lot of time.
Yeah.
Isn't it just cheaper to add more memory? I mean, wouldn't it just make more sense to have?
Well, sometimes it's nice to have non-volatile for stuff that stays between boots, right? I don't know. I think. Here's the thing. We all know that the hardware manufacturers are really, when push comes to shove, if they have the choice between adding a part that costs a tenth of a cent and not adding a part that costs a tenth of a cent, they're going to not add the tenth of a cent part every time. And a lot of NAND storage is going to be more expensive than a tenth of a cent. So unless there's some appreciable benefit to having this storage on the device, they're not going to add it.
Yeah.
And I will clarify. So ACC's solution with that M.2 on the GPU was more like, oh, hey, you bought a motherboard and you ran out of M.2 slots. This just gives you another M.2 slot and shares the same bandwidth as the GPU, which is usually not saturating that by 16 anyway. So
that's an interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously it added a little bit of cost, but it was like, oh, hey, it's, you know, an upgrade path that you maybe wouldn't have. Or if you were to try to get a separate SSD add-in card, right? So this is like, oh no, you get your add-in card and your GPU at the same time.
Well, and it lets them, it gives them another point of differentiation on an increasingly samey market, right?
Yeah.
So, what level graphics card was that on?
Oh, it was more lower end. I believe it was the 4060 Ti, 4070 ish area. I don't think it was the high end stuff. But I mean, one benefit though is that because of the placement and the intense cooling, like it actually kept it way cooler than the M.2 on the board itself.
Interesting.
So it actually, it benefited from the placement and the cooling solution of the GPU.
That's interesting.
So,
not to bring up something weird, but have you all seen the reports of the RGB memory?
Oh yeah,
discoloring backplates on some graphics cards.
Did I send you
what?
That? Oh, that was really weird. Yeah, let me find that link. I mean, just the photo alone, like it took me a second to be like, wait, what?
I couldn't understand it. So basically, you have people running RGB memory, and it looks like.
So it's like it's burning like into the backplate of the GPU.
Burning
it's
into
like
the backplate, discoloring it.
It's
I don't
like
understand
UV light,
what
I think
that
is,
could be.
Yeah.
Wow, if it's releasing that much UV, though, that's bad.
Yeah, it's saying at least...
I can't believe it's releasing that much UV, though.
Yeah. That would give you... are my ankles getting sunburned because I'm sitting next to my RGB memory? Is this a real concern? Do I need to put sunscreen on?
I don't know.
I mean, you imagine that it's a UV discoloration, but I...
That's nuts.
It's pretty hard to get, you know, it takes work to get UV out of LEDs for a while. So I just can't imagine. Well, actually, maybe they just weren't.
Maybe
they're
just
getting
don't filter
supplied
it properly.
Substandard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I just shared a link in the chat. But yeah, there's an article from Video Cards.
I mean,
saying that, there's two Redditors within a 24-hour period have shared similar stories on their GPUs. One of them is a Gigabyte GPU, one of them is MSI, and it looks like at least one of the photos, actually both of them you can tell are Trident Z because of the way that it's etched in. That it's in there. So yeah, they're like, it could be UV light, it could be heat generated, maybe. I don't know.
It's not damaging the actual GPU, it's just a cosmetic damage,
no,
right?
Just cosmetic.
Yeah,
just
discoloring in the backplate. But you know, the funny thing is, people actually intentionally used to put UV lights into their PCs.
Oh yeah, because it made them glow cool.
Really?
Yeah, you did your custom water loop, and then you filled it up with a glowing UV reactive liquid, and then you put UV lights into it to make it glow radioactive, kind of.
And you use those cold cathode tubes that were real intense. Those things, oof. That's I mean, that is like, if it's making that much UV to actually like discolor the back of the metal face, like you do need to think about what your window is filtering out on your case side and stuff like that. Like, it's not good. You shouldn't have that much UV in your space.
Although if it's behind glass, it's probably not going to hurt.
Glass is generally, the modern tempered glass is probably fine. It's not like it's 50 Zara glass that doesn't have the whatever it is they use to absorb the UV, but yeah.
Well, listen, only two reports. It was on Reddit, so, you know.
Go check my video card when I get home.
There you go.
Yeah, man. I mean, people assume it's UV, but it is also possible it could be heat reaction, you know? you would think it would be the same across the entire backplate because the GPU would heat it up, but it is a little strange. Hopefully people get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I want to find out what's going on here. That's really interesting.
Very curious. A couple more questions here, and then we'll get out of here. Goals Camp over on Discord asked, why are GPU companies developing free software and technologies to improve game performance? We used to have to buy a new GPU to get that. Developing free software and technologies to improve game performance. We used to have to buy a new GPU to get that.
I mean, it's all competitive advantage stuff, right? It's anything that they can do. The brand loyalty is a thing. If you look at phones and laptops and lots of other places in technology, once you've spent 5 years using an Android phone or an iOS phone, you're probably not going to switch because you're pretty locked in on how your data is stored and what apps you've bought and all that stuff. GPUs, you can switch with very little impact on a year-to-year basis. And, you know, that means they have to work harder to maintain that kind of brand loyalty than somebody like iOS or Apple or Google do.
Well, and there are some software technologies that are gated depending on what you have. Obviously, the 20 series with the RTX, you could get ray tracing on there, but you can't get DLSS. You can't get some of the kind of features that required the different hardware. Some of that stuff is locked. What was it? Wasn't ray reconstruction only on 30 and 40 series?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I think so.
That seems right.
Yeah, I can't remember, but on the software side, NVIDIA Broadcast. I don't know if any of that stuff is gated, but there are upgrades to like the codecs, like the NVENC performance.
You'd only get NVENC 2 with 3,000 or a couple of 22,000 series cards.
AV1 was first on 40 series. Yeah. So there are some things that are gated behind actually buying a new GPU. Hey, if you want this new technology, you have to get a new GPU. I think what they're saying is that it's not as much as it used to be. You want physics in this game, you got to get a new GPU for that.
And also, they're better at, like, it used to be that a game would come out and then 3 months later you would get a driver update that was like, hey, we gave you a 20% performance increase in this game. And that still happens sometimes, but often...
Oh, Intel does it all the time.
Well, Intel's a little bit of a unique situation. But often... what would have happened when that would have happened before, after the game's release, NVIDIA and to a lesser extent AMD are both pretty good about reaching out, especially to high profile studios, and saying, hey, we'd like to take a look at early builds and see what we can do. And they run it through their profiling stuff, their profiling labs, and tell you hey, you have a draw call here that's inefficient on this hardware and this hardware and also a 2060, and like, you get a whole huge report of all the things that are wrong with your game, and you kind of triage that and fix the stuff that's going to impact the most users. So you don't see as many of those up to 25% performance increases mm-hmm. post-launch, because they happened before the game was even out, before you even knew that there was a performance issue. I mean, obviously there's always stuff that they miss. There's 15,000 games or something released on Steam every year now. So it's, they pull the low hanging fruit, I think, there.
Yeah, and I think card makers and all hardware makers know there's only so far you could push people to do upgrades. This isn't 1998 anymore. People are not upgrading machines every year, so you give as much value to the hardware and people appreciate it and they buy your same thing again next time, right? That's pretty basic.
That's it.
We got a good question that just came in from Phantom Tech. Asking, do we have any PCs in our possession that will remain on Windows 10 forever? For example, time locking a PC to Windows 10 for era-specific applications, anything like that. One of the stories I like to say is that when I first out of school, when I went to audio engineering school, I worked at a post-production house, and the head mixer there that I learned under, it was a Mac shop, obviously, for audio. And when he bought a new piece of hardware, Mac hardware, he would lock it to whatever that OS. He'd be like, hey, this is the OS it came with. I'd never upgrade this OS.
Are they not connected to the internet at that point, too?
No, they were. It would just be like a version kind of thing. Same thing with like Pro Tools. Like, that was kind of the main editing software we use. So it was like, hey, you bought a new Mac tower. this one came with this OS and this version of Pro Tools, and that's where it forever stayed. That was a little extreme, but I mean, it was a good lesson, at least for me early on, of like, hey, don't just willy nilly upgrade your stuff. Don't just upgrade to OBS 30, you know, right before you shoot a podcast.
And we did.
It
was fine.
Yeah. It's probably fine.
So, I mean, there are some reasons to, yes, time lock a machine. Does anyone here have a reason?
I think everything I have in the house now is running Windows 11 at this point. Maybe my daughter's computer isn't, but the audio people are the most superstitious on this front, in my experience.
Well, I mean, you kind of have to be, yeah.
Like, I have a friend who's a composer, and he has, like, the stuff hooked up to his Synths is running, like, Windows XP and hasn't been plugged into a network in 10 years at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I usually update because I like to, I don't let history hold me back.
but you're also saying then there's no like applications that
let the past die, Adam.
Yeah, okay, Gordon.
Most
you
of
love the
past.
Don't let it.
Most of the machines I have are just simply stranded. There's definitely some KB Lake. There's I think my wife's old box, which she hasn't used in a while, is still on the Sandy Bridge, so it's not going anywhere. So unfortunately, they will be left behind, which means got to look at alternatives for them. So I don't generally do that as a policy matter, but it is a bummer again, because we're quickly approaching something that's never happened to the PC before. So we'll see. Yeah. It's a bummer.
I think maybe 2025 is the year of the Linux desktop, Adam.
Yeah, well,
maybe.
I
mean,
DaVinci
maybe,
runs
right?
really well on yeah. Linux. I've heard, but yeah, I would say for production, I'm not as rigid as my old boss once was. For me, it's more like, oh, hey, major point releases are like, allow, like, I never usually upgrade right at a major point release. I'll allow it to get a couple minor point releases after that. Or, I mean, for me, I'm still on Windows 10 on my work desktop at home.
Same.
Mostly because I don't have a reason to go to Windows 11, you know, and so it's like, oh, if there's no compelling reason, then I'm going to continue to use that. Until there is a compelling reason, it's not really necessarily because there's something specific about Windows 10 personally.
I kept my stream machine was on Windows 10 until I accidentally pressed the wrong button.
Oh,
and
God,
it
yeah.
did the window. It was like, hey, don't worry, man.
They left
your data is safe.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry.
We got all your stuff right here.
Mark says the year of the Linux desktop. We'd love to see a topic of the show on that one time. Gordon, what happened to your Pop OS? You should have done that during recovery, man.
I should have, but you know, it's just
so, somewhere Wendell is crying a little bit inside.
Well, you know what I should do is take a laptop that I can't run Windows 11 on and reinstall Pop OS on that.
That's
that probably makes the most amount of sense.
There you go.
And you know, I it really. As we approach the, you know, the singularity of Windows 10 for old hardware, it does feel like people really should be educating people on what the alternatives are. I mean, it is always better to have newer hardware, but there are people who don't have the funds for that. So it feels like exploring alternate OSs really should be something that the, you know, YouTubers and the press should be doing to enable those people to have a more secure computing environments in the, you know, the post Windows 10 quantum singularity, right?
I mean, look, I'll dig up an old Sandy Bridge machine and put Ubuntu on it and see how that goes. My guess is it runs great given how Ubuntu runs on my server, which is the equal vintage.
Yep.
All right, two more questions. One of them's a serious one. One of them's a fun one. This is the one I didn't get into last week. Friend of the show, VC Jester. Question for Gordon. Since NVIDIA is now the third richest company in the world, have they had enough good times to make up for the bad times yet? Can we have reasonable GPU prices again, please?
I don't know, because, you know, they serve the shareholders. The shareholders, no matter how much money you give them, always want more money. I don't know if GPU prices will get back to normal, but we are sort of seeing some of that. We are seeing prices at least approach MSRPs for current generation cards. And as inventories, you know, piles up, then they'll probably cut some prices. And then you never know that if NVIDIA wants to, and I believe they do, they want to defend their market share, and they, by the way, they're the third richest company on the planet, they could really go to war with everybody else. So they could really do a pricing war if they really felt they needed to. But I don't think they're under any pressure to do a pricing war because, again, and I'll say this, and people will say it's because I'm a shill, but the truth is people buy NVIDIA because they prefer NVIDIA. Until people decide they don't prefer NVIDIA and they buy Intel or they buy AMD or they buy Qualcomm, then, you know, there's no pricing pressure for them to reduce costs. So until the demand really drops, it won't change. And why would it? Because their whole idea is to make money for shareholders, because the shareholders give you money and they want more money back. So that's not going to change.
Well, yeah, I was looking at the latest John Petty research to see if there's some updates to the actual market share of GPUs. This includes laptops and desktops, but NVIDIA currently holding... this is change. Crap, I don't know how to read this chart. Anyway, NVIDIA still owns most
of the shipping
GPUs.
More GPUs is the TLDR.
It's shipping.
Not,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
The higher prices aren't hurting them.
Yeah.
So they're not going to reduce prices until the economists would say you keep increasing the price until your sales growth slows down, and then that's how you find out what the market will sustain. This is just capitalism working, guys.
Yeah. Well,
it's probably 80% desktop, I think. They're probably 80% desktop, and if you look at mobile, they're probably 95%. You know, I mean, they really don't have much. There is no lack of demand for NVIDIA graphics cards for gaming. And that's simply the truth. It's not like I'm saying I support any of that, but that is the truth. So
here's this is March 5th, 2024 from John Petty Research. The market shares for the discrete desktop GPU suppliers shifted as NVIDIA's market share decreased by 2% and AMD's market share increased year over year by 7%. Intel remained flat, and NVIDIA continues to hold a dominant market share of 80%.
This is for AIB business?
Yes, this is discrete.
Yeah.
So you know, NVIDIA dropped a little bit, 2%, but not enough to really come out swinging.
No, that's margin of error for basically.
All right. Last question from friend of the show, Ruru2. We were talking about this over on the Discord because Elena shared a deal in the deals channel of a headlamp, which it can be good for PC building. And I mentioned, Gordon, how you have a collection of flashlights that you would describe yourself as a flashlight connoisseur, right?
Me, yes, because yes. I'm a collector of flashlights, although I've backed off of that in recent years because, you know, I've realized it is incredibly stupid to, like, buy flashlights when you already have flashlights, and your eyeballs do have unless you have an immense increase in lumens, it's really hard to tell the difference. Although when we were at Computex, I bought that flashlight.
I do remember that now. Yeah,
I love that flashlight. It's awesome because it's really good. It's a Phoenix flashlight. So my brands are, you know, Surefire, Streamlight, and Phoenix. Those are sort of my favorites. They're the most reliable that I've found. And that one was cool because it had a USB port that was hidden under. You would unscrew a collar and you get to a USB-C port. So it was easy to charge up, and also it was very bright and a good thrower. For flashlight aficionados, they would understand what that means. It was a really good thrower flashlight, but really tiny. So what is that? I forget what it was, though. PD-20C or R or something like that.
You were very excited. I remember we were walking around the electronics market, and like you saw it, and then we passed it up for a little bit, and you're like, no, you know what? I'm going to go back. And then you struck up a conversation with the kind gentleman, and... Yeah.
Well, there was a moment when the white LED flashlight, like when white LEDs got cheap enough that you could put them in a flashlight that cost like $40 or $50, where there was a huge improvement in flashlight performance compared to like the old tungsten, you know, filament bulbs. And like, it was a reason to be excited about flashlights. Like, headlamps became a thing because of that, right?
And now it's all like the LEDs are still getting better, but it's not like we're seeing the huge jumps that we were in 2015 or 2016. Or 2007, yeah, I can't remember what it was. It's
they still get like the efficiency is improved and also the brightness. It really does it you know, because it's basically silicon, and really it still does get incredibly bright. Like it's amazing what you can get out of a flashlight now. Where I think the one I bought in Taiwan was like 500 lumens or something like that, and it's really tiny. And that same flashlight from 4 years before probably was, down at 200 lumens. So it is impressive. And, the quality's gotten better, the higher CRI and everything. And so, and arguably the thing that as a flashlight snob, if you can buy it at like a Costco or whatever, those are junk and it runs on AAAs. So, lithium ions are the way to go.
I mean, a lot of people use their phone.
See, I like rechargeable. I use rechargeable LiPo AAs so I can swap them out and not have to plug into something if I'm out camping or something. But also, really? They last long enough now that it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah, and you really when you're camping, you really don't need a tremendous amount of light. So it is always fun, but it is kind of silly.
Yeah,
to have a tremendous amount of light.
I think about like when I was a kid and I used to go cave camping and you'd always take like two flashlights and five extra bulbs and three sets of batteries or four sets of batteries and like for each flashlight. And like you had to know how to switch the bulbs in the dark and the whole thing. And like now it's just like they're just so reliable. It kind of doesn't matter. I mean, I don't go cave camping anymore either.
Well, as long as you, I mean, but that's the reason why the brands I just recommended, like those are pretty rock solid. You should. If you believe in something, if you're only going to carry one, you don't want it to fall apart, then it's definitely better to pay for a better flashlight. So I think it's worth it. But
yeah, you got me hooked on Phoenix. I have the small little Phoenix light that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, awesome. I used to be like Surefire. I'm a big believer in Surefire, but it's really hard to justify unless you're the United States military to pay for a Surefire flashlight. So
well, the one thing I will say is if you build PCs, if you work in PC cases a lot, headlamp is really, really nice for, especially as I get older and my eyes get worse in low light, it's so nice having the ability to put a bright light and not have to, just not have to use my hand to hold it in the right place. So I have two free hands.
You put it in your mouth. Crack your teeth a little bit.
I already have the
classic
groove. Yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely recommend that people, if you're going to buy a headlamp, you should buy a quality headlamp that if you're going to buy one that's running lithium ion. Because you're basically strapping a grenade to your head.
Yeah.
And there are documented cases.
During a build once, yeah.
There are documented cases of people's flashlights, low quality ones running, low quality lithium ion cells going kaboom. So it's not good to cheap out. So.
Well, how do you find out if it's low quality? Because the one Elena pointed to, she said she put it in here just because it was really cheap.
I do Black Diamonds. You get them at REI. They're like camping and biking flashlights. And they're AAAs usually. There's like two or three AAAs. They're $20 for the basic one and $30 for the nice one. It like hits the and they're water resistant, which is important when you're camping and stuff like that. Mm. We bought them for the whole family the last time we went camping, and it turns out really useful to just be able to have a little bit of a light when you're walking in the trail late at night or going to the bathroom or whatever.
Yeah, I will say I break my rule on the AAA-based headlamps. I have some Black Diamonds. I have a really nice Phoenix. But for, the average headlamps on AAAs, the commodity Costco ones are pretty good. You can get like three of them for $15 when they're on sale. So I have a bunch of those. Although it's weird, it's stupid because I have like two unopened because I just have them extras because people... AAAs are terrible because they leak all over and they'll kill it eventually. But one of the sets I bought had like UV light. I'm like, what do you need UV light in a hotel room?
So you can paint the back plate of your GPU.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah, or like you do maybe you're hunting scorpions, but like seems kind of
which actually
silly,
living in Phoenix.
Don't ever turn on a black light in the desert. It's terrifying.
Because they
glow. The scorpions, they're everywhere. You'd
be like, oh, I had no idea there was that many right there.
for PC building, I like having a flood. Like I like having like like a lot of the cheap lights don't have a spotlight. They have just kind of a one LED that makes a little bubble of light around you, which is fine. Having the ability to switch between the spot and the flood and dim it down so it's not too bright turns out pretty nice when you're working inside a PC case, is what I will say. So it's worth going up one notch from the cheapest possible.
Well, speaking of cheapest possible, this one that Elena had linked is a Slick Deals from Walmart. I'm sorry, and it's an Ozark Trail LED combo. It has a 200 lumen headlamp and a 300 lumen flashlight with batteries for $3.65.
Well, that's pretty cheap.
That's pretty
nice. Is it actually alkaline based, not lithium ion?
It's alkaline based. It looks like.
Okay, that's good. That's fine.
You can put the N loops, you know, your NIMH rechargeables in. Like everybody should just use those. Yeah. They're fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I've done. Is because I'm so sick of the alkaline batteries just leaking and destroying things. I put rechargeables into things that, like my Geiger counter. It's like, okay, I'm not going to deal with the AAAs in this.
Speaking of another collection.
Yeah. So the only thing you can't put the NIMHs in is, like, smoke detectors don't like them, and there's like three or four categories of devices. Usually it says on the battery compartment, hey, don't use rechargeables in this, and it's because they want the specific, you know, electrical characteristics of the alkaline battery. But the LiPos don't leak and don't destroy stuff, which is nice. Or the nickel metal hydrides don't leak and don't destroy stuff, which is nice.
I have a bug detector that does not like alkaline, or does not like rechargeables, interestingly.
So. What kind of bug detector?
Well, it's just an RF finder.
Oh, yeah.
It's like honestly, for actual, you know, people who do whatever the hell they call it, you know, actual
counterintelligence.
Yeah, gosh, there's a word they have for it. It's like electronic counter, but you know, people, this would be entry level to them, but it's mid range. For consumer, it's actually very nice for finding bugs, because, you know, one day I got on a kick and I went, but I was like, I don't want to put alkalines in it because I know it's going to destroy it eventually one day when they leak randomly.
You just take them out when you're done, when you're not using it, right?
Yeah, but it's a pain because you have to unscrew it, and because you can't have battery compartments that don't unscrew it, that don't have latches anymore. You have to unscrew the thing. It's just a pain in the butt. So I probably should look for some lithium ion, because they do have those, like the LiPos that supposedly put out 1.5 volts. Have you seen those?
I mean,
sometimes they'll say like, oh, it's 1.5 volts, and then people will put them on voltmeters, like, oh, it's actually 1.6 something, and like it might fry the thing you're putting it.
Yeah, or it's 1.35. Now the nice thing with the flashlights is you put a 1.6 and a 1.5 in something that expects 1.5, it's going to be brighter, it probably
hopefully
burn a little less in the long run, but yeah.
Friend of the show, Tim Lau, says that Ozark Trail is Walmart's store brand.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Also, man, we've been talking internally about spinning up some TikTok channels. There we go. If you want a Gordon reviewing flashlights TikTok channel,
welcome to flashlight.
All flashlight world. Yes.
Yeah.
The flashlight reviewers, they're just like, no, that's just like, that's like. It's like a gamer's nexus thing. It's like, and this is a 2-hour video with charts. Like, I just
that's totally up your alley.
You gotta go out in the woods, Gordon, and just, you know, that's the only way to really do this. You know, you're just gonna build a shack out in the woods someplace.
Well, but then it comes down to unless you have an integrating sphere, it's like okay, that's like $10,000 in hardware, and I can't afford that.
There you go, Clark Kent. Just call yourself Flash Gordon.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, there you go.
Flash Gordon, the Flash Gordon channel.
Of course,
yeah.
Clark Kent comes up with that.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, okay. I like it. All right. Well, so the real question that kicked all that off was, Ruru 2 was asking, do you have any Star Trek flashlights?
They didn't have
No.
Did they have flashlights on Star Trek?
Yeah, because they'd hold them in this kind of like Star Trek manner in Next Generation. And then another one, they had them strapped to their wrist too, but they would hold it because it would look pretty lame if it looked like they had like a mag light in the 23rd or 24th century.
Mm-hmm.
So they had something like this, and they'd hold it like for some reason. And then if you watch the show, they'd always shine it in each other's faces. Like, why were you shining it in my face?
Because you had to light the other character. It's
I know.
It's the same reason spacesuits all have lights inside shining at the characters' faces on movies. It's stupid.
Yeah. Or in cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cars are always like evenly lighting people on the inside.
Yeah. I keep seeing these ads for clip-on croc flashlights. So it's like little headlamps for your crocs. You put them in the holes on the croc. and then you have little light puddles underglow? In front of you. Like, no, it's like, so you shine the light in front of you so you can see where you're walking.
Oh, in front of you. Okay. Yeah. I thought it was shooting up like you have a, you know, telling ghost stories or something.
I don't own a pair of Crocs, so it's not really an issue for me. Yeah. But
you don't own any Crocs? They're awesome.
I have had Crocs in the past, but I wore them out, so, and I have not bought a replacement
Never
pair.
Had a single one.
There's a $2 super chat that just came in from a friend of the show, VZ Gesture. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Didn't Gordon do a flashlight hardcore hardware?
We did. Yeah, we were on Alameda by the naval base, and Gordon points this huge ass flashlight across to the Oakland shipyard, and was just lighting up the side of the of the tankers over there.
Did you ever see one of the Google Fire Swords that they made? It was like a 12 lipo. It was a huge like maglite size, bigger than maglite size thing with these enormous. There you go. Adam found it on chat. Adam Savage had one that somebody at Google had gifted him, and we found a battery pack for it and turned it on at one point, and it was I had mental stunning because it was so bright when you shined it at somebody. I don't think he he had a way to charge it at that point.
Well, I remember in Hardcore Hardware, so for those who don't know, Hardcore Hardware was a series that we had long, long ago. I think it ended in 2016 or something, where Gordon would just do these over-the-top review of hardware, and mostly PC hardware, but we ended up doing some non-PC related stuff, but we did the stand-up, the A-roll, down in our old storage unit, and you had the flashlight at the beginning. I don't remember what the beginning was, but you know, you kind of talk about it, and then you turn the light on like that was the whatever part of the skit it was, and like we couldn't tune the lighting just right because like every time you would turn it on, even at those lowest settings, it would completely blow out the camera.
Oh yeah,
and like blind you, and we were like, oh wait, how do we do this?
Yeah, no, that weird thing. You should have seen the battery in this thing, because it was lithium polymer that looked like maybe 2.5 Coke cans taped together.
Oh, that's not good. That's too much. You don't want that much in your hand. That'll take your hand off when it goes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the nice thing is, again, you buy a quality flashlight. This was a Phoenix. I can't remember the exact model, but
it was big. Insane. Yeah.
There was a period of time there in the early 2000s, though, when like those when people. A lot of people were making those big lipos out of like lots of little lipo cells that were just wired up in series or whatever. And like they were using them for drones and stuff like that. And you'd get the drone and or the flashlight or whatever and be like, hey, when you charge this, put it in this bag. And the bag is like a flameproof asbestos bag, basically. and you're just like, I'm not going to do this. This is not a thing I'm going to charge in the house, probably. This is like a put it out in the shed in the backyard, maybe put it in the garage. We're better at lipo batteries now, I think, is the take.
Are we? I don't know. It's funny because Elena is doing, you know, like battery bank testing, you know, like portable battery banks.
And I was like,
I was like, here's some like testing stuff that I've done. And I recommend that you put them into, you know, either a cooking tray.
Yeah.
You should always charge these things on the cooking tray. She's like, why? It's like, because... You just don't know how questionable some of these things are. And by the way, they will burn phosphorus, right?
Well, so. and the smoke they release is super, super bad, right? Like we went and saw, we went and did BattleBot stuff at Tested years ago. And like we were interviewing one of the people who had just lost a fight. And as we were doing the interview, they were like, oh, wait, we've got to stop and clear out of this area. And we had to clear a 100-foot circle around this thing because it had started blowing lithium smoke out of the top. And it's like super toxic. It's really bad for you. You don't want to be around that.
Yeah.
Whoa. You know. Yeah.
Yikes.
This is why when they asked if I had any lithium polymer batteries as I was getting on the plane one day, I was like, no, I just have a bunch of Samsung Galaxy Note 7s in there.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
I got the special screening after that.
Oh, man, I got a funny story about that.
Yeah, we don't ever joke about that.
Yeah. Florence Ion was reviewing it at the time, and we were going somewhere, and we got a lift, and we were live streaming from her Note 7, and she was like, oh man, this thing's really hot. And the review unit, and then later, you know.
Yeah, later
we were like, man, yeah, later we were like, dang, our lift ride could have ended real bad.
Yeah. Oh my.
At least you can throw it out the window in the lift.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to get out of here. For more flashlight talk, subscribe to Gordon's TikTok channel.
We need to
reserve that URL, Gordon. Let me get over to my notes. Check back next week for your fix of PC talk here on The Full Nerd. Listen to us on the go. Please subscribe to us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, Pocket Casts, anywhere you can point your RSS reader to. We will be there. Instead of doing a quippy kind of thing about leaving a review, because that's Gordon. Gordon's good at that. I've never been good at that. We do have a recent review that I want to bring up from Benjamin H. over on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much. Gave us 5 stars. Said, I love this podcast exists, as well as every episode is 2 hours long. I drive a lot for work, and it's really nice not having a queue of a bunch of podcasts. Hey, you know what? We do it. We do it just for you, Ben.
We're the friend of the commuter.
Yeah.
Thanks,
we're
Ben.
Friend of the computer. So thank you. Speaking of thanks, I want to thank Gordon Mong for tuning in again. Thank you, Gordon.
Good to see everybody.
Yeah,
it's good to see you, Gordon.
Thank you, Will Smith, for hanging out.
Anytime. Yeah. Love to be here.
Good times. And thank you, our awesome audience out there. And thank you to Willis for controlling the verticals and horizontals. He was going to take us out of here.
All right. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We will see you next time. Bye.